they responded so that give them another chance to ask
The next was Honorable Kopane about the annual report and targets for training survivors of cervical cancer. Dr. Kili will respond. Students in Russia, Minister answered, but one of the things that we had planned, I think the HOD were going to go to Cuba, not Cuba, Russia, I'm sorry. Why? Because we had insisted that they needed to move those students, the 53 or 57, from that, you know, I don't even think it's a proper place. So when they were supposed to go back, they had serious difficulty. We did our own investigation. We informed that the person who organized this is a Nigerian who recruited these students. And like, they didn't want to address them as a group. They were talking to them individually. They didn't want the parents to attend the meeting. And they were even, in fact, in Russia, they are told to dress in a particular way, and it's very, very uncomfortable. So we still wanted to know, because the HOD of Free State of going to Russia. So we're hoping that by then Mpumalanga would have gone. So I was still waiting for the response. Okay. The Mpumalanga said they visited the students last week and addressed their concerns. The agreement is that they will remain in Asaka, meaning they are going to remain in that place. So this is the response. But I think it needs a proper investigation, because I think the parents were worried that when they come back, that university, whatever they produce, don't be a piece of paper written, you know. It's a serious concern. But I think we'll go back again to our Mpumalanga colleagues and meet with them, because we've interacted with the students themselves and the parents, and it's a major concern. When they told us about who's recruited them and the methods that they engage them individually, they don't want to talk to them in a meeting formally, and they don't want parents to attend the meeting. The others were environmental health. We agree, actually, honorable members, what we've done, we've prepared, every year we prepare a budget bid for treasure. This time around, we're going to do an analysis to show them the absence of environmental health officers. If you don't have them and they're not available in adequate numbers, the cost to the country, if you just do the sum, just the cost of the listeria outbreak, loss of jobs, just the cost to the companies, because if you inspect them regularly, then they will comply, and the cost in terms of human life loss. So this is our approach, that it's worth an investment. We'll keep on preparing those budget bids. We do that regularly, and we won't tire, because it's an essential service. We should have this service. I fully agree. Then the NHI contracting, Dr. Anban Pide will respond. Honorable Masalela, the matching of performance and expenditure. Actually, we did an exercise. Maybe Dr. Andrews and CFO will respond. We tried this in our planning cycle, and maybe when we report this time around, we'll be able to show that direct match, because it keeps on being raised repeatedly, and I think CFO will also respond how we've attempted. We tried the exercise, and they said it's complex. I think when we tried for this report, actually, they said it's complex. I'm just telling the truth. So we'll attempt again. The okay. The other question, the minister has got. Functionality of clinics and old communities. Let me just explain the criteria that is used for the functionality of clinics. What they do when they assess the clinics for functionality, they look at whether do they have a committee, the frequency of meetings, the record keeping, the existence of a structure, and the minutes and the agenda. Those are just basic things they look at. But training, definitely they are not trained. On record, they've not been trained. These are just the basis of the assessment. They just look at these things for functionality. I thought I needed to raise that. As to training, yes, training was supposed to have begun this year. It was disrupted. In fact, we were supposed to start in July, but Ms. Hunter, because she was driving this agenda, got assigned to Northwest, so there's been a significant delays. The Ward Breeze Primary Healthcare Outreach Team, I'll ask Dr. Pide to respond about the training and the functionality and the performance. So maybe let me start with you, Jürgen, to take up some of the questions.
Thank you very much, DG. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, good evening. Just to answer some of them, the Swana project, Honourable Member, it's a Doppler ultrasound machine that was developed by the University of Pretoria together with the CSIR, and it measures blood flow across the placenta to diagnose early diagnosis of stillbirths. We are currently working with Professor Bob Pattinson and his team, and we are trying it out in 9 different regional hospitals to see how it works. We will get more data from this project in January. But from the preliminary data we have, it seems like it works, and it might help us cut diagnose stillbirths early and cut down the number of perinatal deaths. So it's actually it's a South African invention, so it's very good, and it's low cost, so it's a good thing. Honourable Member, about the number of people trained to do liquid-based cytology, it's over 4,000 doctors and nurses that have been trained by the National Health Laboratory Service. You will recall that in terms of the cervical cancer policy that was launched last year, we have suggested moving from pap smears to liquid-based cytology, and as soon as we can afford it, to move to HPV DNA testing, because it's much more sensitive and specific. So we've been training healthcare workers, both doctors and nurses, to do the new liquid-based cytology test, which is going to cost us a little bit more than the pap smear, but we think it's worth it in terms of getting good quality smears, and so which means that women don't have to come back to get another smear done, which has been happening with the poor quality of pap smears. With respect to the issue raised by Honourable Mashalela about ward-based outreach teams, I've been working with the policy in terms of implementing the new policy that was adopted last year, and there are 6 things, Honourable Member, that we are currently doing. The first is to have a better sense of how many we have, how many community health workers we have. And that audit we've been doing really since last year, and it's a moving target. Now, we have to know how many we have, how many teams we have with a greater degree of certainty, where they are and how where they are is related to the burden of disease. So we're also mapping where they are in terms of the geographic mapping. The second issue is around the remuneration. The minimum wage of $3,500 now needs to kick in, and we've been looking at the qualifications. About 26,000 of them have matric. The remainder don't have matric, but have fairly significant amounts of experience. So we're looking at how to progress everybody to $3,500, but we need additional money to get everybody to $3,500. The reality now is that it's quite variable what provinces are paying them. Everything from 2,100 to 3,000 rand. So we're trying to standardize it towards 3,500. The next issue is around changing the scope of work. Historically, we have been doing a large number of things. And you know, if you ask anyone to do a large number of things, the quality will suffer. So we're trying to restrict it to the priority related to the burden of disease. So we've restructured the scope of work, which means reorientation in terms of training. So we've started the training, as the DG suggests, and we've trained them in Ekurhuleni already in terms of the reorientation against the new scope of work. We've also changed the scope of work of the outreach team leaders, who, as I'm sure the honourable members know, are enrolled nurses who are supervising them. The next thing is to change the metrics, the M&E, because the M&E that we're currently using are really four metrics, which don't give you a good sense of the levels of productivity. So we're changing the metrics, which would mean changing the NIDs as well as the DG was suggesting earlier. And then the final thing is really to have a better performance management system in place, because currently it's dependent largely on NGOs who are currently employing them and deploying them in the health sector, with some exceptions where the provinces are doing it. The idea is that over time, all provinces will put them on per cell and then supervise them directly from by provincial managers rather than by NGOs. So we are really trying to restructure the ward-based outreach teams to try and get better value for money. At the moment, the estimate is that we are spending about 2 billion rands on this cadre of about 54,000 community health workers. But if you look at what the return on that effort is, you know, it's very difficult to measure currently, and we're looking at how to do it in a more robust way. Thanks, DG. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Andanpile.
Thank you, DG. I think there are three areas, three questions that I had. The one was about Ketlapela and the Department of Energy. I was also surprised as to how the Department of Energy became involved. But the production of active pharmaceutical ingredients will happen on a site that does fluorination of chemicals, which is based at the Pelindaba site, which basically falls under the Department of Energy, and it's under the auspices of Pelchem Pharmaceuticals, which is a state-owned pharmaceutical company. So the intention is that any API site for production will happen at that Pelindaba site, because they have the capacity to do fluorination, which is a key step in the production of APIs for ARVs and a number of other drugs as well. So that's why the Department of Energy is involved, because they actually own the site. Then the question about KZN and the CCMDD provider. The CCMDD provider in KZN is Pharmacy Direct. Now, Pharmacy Direct has been involved with the CCMDD program from the beginning. They were not delivering services in KZN previously. They were delivering services in other provinces. When we did a re-tender, the provider for CCMDD in KZN was previously Medipost, but they came in at a price which was probably about 25% higher than what Pharmacy Direct was providing the service at, and so we had to then allocate it to Pharmacy Direct. Pharmacy Direct is also doing a number of has a number of contracts with medical schemes in this regard. So Pharmacy Direct is doing a fairly good job in terms of that. The problems in KZN are not about the provider. It's largely about the way KZN Department of Health manages chronic prescriptions. Pharmacy Direct is quite a strict service provider in that any prescription must comply with the law. In other words, if there's a prescription for medication for unbilled pill, it must have all my details, it must have the date, it must be signed appropriately, etc., in order for it to be a legal prescription, because they take responsibility for that prescription when they dispense it, and they have a legal liability in that regard. In KZN, with Medipost, it appears that a number of these prescriptions which were, if I can put borderline in terms of legality, Medipost used to dispense despite the fact that it was a risk for them. So Pharmacy Direct is not prepared to do that, and they want the province to comply with the law in terms of making sure the prescriptions are fully compliant. And that's where the difficulty was. But over time, they are teaching the provinces to what they must comply with. Well, they should know that anyway. The second area is that the province took a decision. I know I was with the portfolio committee when you were told this, about insulin. The province took a decision that they do not want to supply insulin via the CCMDD, because they felt that it was costing them too much and they had to supply too much. So they on their own decided that they don't want to participate in the cold chain aspect of CCMDD. So any medicine that requires cold chain like insulin will not be part of the CCMDD program. And that's a decision they made, not a decision we made or a decision that Pharmacy Direct had taken. On the issue relating to NHI underspending, the underspending is mainly in the area of the IT system. And that's because, I think the DG was mentioning earlier, National Treasury had come up with a system called G-Commerce. And the intention is that National Treasury would like to have full sight of all government departments that have warehouses. How much of stock do they have in there when they procure? Who do they procure from? Are they procuring from the contracted suppliers? And are there any inappropriate practices, etc.? So they developed the system, and at the same time, the Auditor General had done a review of our warehouses and said the IT systems in our pharmaceutical warehouses are too old and outdated, and it leads to problems with controls, etc. So Treasury had said, we are developing this system. We would like you to use it in your pharmaceutical warehouse rather than you going to procure a new system. So with that in mind, we then deployed the system first in the Northern Cape because the IT system in the Northern Cape had collapsed. But the system that they had deployed in the Northern Cape did not meet all the requirements for a pharmaceutical depot. So the programmers had to fix that. And it took them much longer than they should actually to do the job. But the view of the department and the DG was that we cannot take a system that is not working optimally in the Northern Cape and then replicate it somewhere else. So we wanted the programmers to finish that, and it took quite a long time to fix those problems. So now that the system is working appropriately in the Northern Cape, that's when we decided we can take it to the next province. So over time, we will then roll it out, but that was the problem that we had. And that's why we couldn't pay for the rollout in the other provinces, because we felt it would be inappropriate to just roll it out knowing that there's a problem with the system. Thank you.
Any other contracting?
On the GP contracting, we contracted GPs as well as we contracted pharmacy assistants. The contract was for a fixed period, and at the end of which there was an understanding that in the case of pharmacy assistants, that the province will then take over these pharmacy assistants. The provinces were aware of this, so were the pharmacy assistants. The provinces then decided, after providing these pharmacy assistants for a significant period, that they now don't want to take them over. And so that's where the contracts are terminated. In the case of GPs, many of the GPs that were contracted by us via FPD, who was paying them, National Treasury had said, we can transfer this money directly to provinces through the grant, and they can contract these GPs and pay them. When that happened, the provinces then took the money and said, no, we don't really like these GPs where they are. We don't need so many GPs now. So they then changed what they were doing, and so the contracting and expenditure on the GPs changed significantly as soon as we gave them a grant.
Thank you. Dr. Andrews, can you refer to the targets for NCDs and the lack of reliable information?
Thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. With regards to, I think DG has explained that we have quite a rigorous target setting process and how we've managed to improve it over the years. We work closely with provinces on the whole entire planning process, and we've managed to drill down right down to districts now. We've developed a district planning framework as well and trained most of the districts in it. The guideline was also adopted by NHC, approved by NHC, so that's been progressing well. And this has really helped us to better align target setting in the National Department of Health. But with regards specifically to non-communicable diseases, the non-communicable diseases, we never really had outcome or impact indicators with regards to the non-communicable diseases. So I don't know what specifically the FSC is referring to, because we do surveys. Even the most recently done demographic and health survey and there were other SANHANEs, the SANHANE survey, specifically focusing on non-communicable diseases. But the DHS now that we've done in 2016, and the report is to be released soon, the final report, we have actually included in there some measures to measure communicable diseases, and we hope that will go forward so that we're able to have good data to track communicable diseases. So in our APP, what we do have are more process indicators in order to help us monitor our progress towards the strategic objective of NCDs. But the actual performance indicators speak to, for example, the guidelines for healthy meal provision in the workplace and the number of government departments we train, guidelines for early childhood nutrition, monitoring of salt content in foodstuffs. So it's all these targets are aimed at improving management, with respect to NCDs, specifically targeting reducing risk factors, but it's very distal, you know, far away from what FSC was saying. So
the next is, I think, the CFO.
Yeah, just on the FFC, Chair, I think we've seen that FFC, although they're independent, they don't check facts with departments. They do their own study. The AG is equally independent, but they do factual, you know, check and correction and so on. So that's been the issue, and we've actually, you know, proven to the FFC that that some of what they're reporting is not correct. I mean, last year they reported some outcomes on provincial outcomes that were totally incorrect. I must say we have to engage them more properly, and they have to engage us more before they actually do some reports. Irregular expenditure, there was an issue of irregular expenditure in provinces, as well as accruals, and unfortunately when it comes to accruals, as the Minister explained, the reduction in real terms of budgets is that, you know, accruals is a direct function of that. So as you decrease the fiscal space, the risk of accruals get more and more. And we've done analysis of cash flows in provinces, and many of them will run out of cash towards the 10th or 11th months, you know, which means that they will carry accruals of at least between 60 to 90 days on average. So when we developed an accrual strategy with the CFOs, it was coupled with a cost containment strategy as well. So, and we've got the areas in human resource, financial management, clinical support, procurement, and ICT. But the only way we're going to deal with accruals is to do it concurrently with a cost containment strategy. The obstacles to obtain a clean audit, I think DG has given an opinion, Minister has given an opinion, I'll give my opinion.
Honourable members, we share the opinion, but respectfully, I was measured in my response, so I would...
So I'll say it from a financial point of view, is that as long as we do have certain infrastructure inherent grants, it comes with a huge audit risk, unfortunately, because the accounting for it is very complex. It's got a myriad of requirements, and the room for error is always there. Unfortunately, up to now we've been able to build a system as we've gone along, and it's been to our favour. But the volumes are definitely getting more and more, complexities are getting more and more, and our capacity is not keeping track, you know, in terms of our internal financial capacity to deal with it. So we're relying heavily on agents like DBSA and their capacity. So I would like to say to you, next year we'll have a clean audit. I can't guarantee it. In fact, we would have been clean probably about three financial years ago if we didn't have to deal with all the inherent grants and the complexities coming with that. But not to say that we're not committed to trying and dealing with it every financial year with the AG. I think that's fine.
Okay, next round. Honorable Maisele, Honorable Tembekwayo, Honorable Mahlalela, Honorable Kopana, Honorable Wilson, then Honorable Nkosi.
The first question is, why did we not reach our goal of school health program? It's very critical that we catch the children at school before the damage is irreversible. We need to relook at our HIV/AIDS prevention strategy in view of the fact that child pregnancy is spiraling out of control and new infections rise, they're increasing, but we spend more condoms. At least we say we spend more on condoms. We spend more on condoms. Maybe they just throw them away. So we need to relook at the strategy and see whether we can infuse some new blood or some new ideas in the system. Otherwise, we're just doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different outcomes. The third question, why not build community health centers instead of NHI clinics? Because the populations increase. So if you build a clinic, the population is increasing exponentially these days. In 10 years' time, it will be a bondogi. But if it was a community health clinic, it would actually serve more, it would be more use value than a clinic that needs to be demolished and rebuilt to comply. Thank you.
I only have got two questions, and then the first one is there was a mention made of the bill regulating tobacco, but I just wanted to ask whether is there an inclusion of e-cigarettes or vaping? Are the two included? And if not, I just would like to have a reason why. And then the second one, there was also a mention that you are using China and other countries as APP suppliers. But there's nowhere where you mentioned Cuba also as a possible supplier, and why? Thank you.
Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of statements initially, I think I said it to the DG. One of the best things I've heard all day is the Minister stating that he thinks that our students and things who go to Cuba, that program should actually fall under higher education, not under health. I think there's no doubt about it, and I think it's something that needs further discussion. And with regards to what he said, that they are getting reports, they go out into the areas and people are saying the nursing colleges must be rebuilt. We get that comment a lot, but it's not about rebuilding the colleges. It's about addressing the accommodation that those nurses stay in. They are appalling, absolutely appalling. In fact, they are disgusting. And no human being should actually be forced to live under those circumstances, and I think that's a huge concern. And I want to follow on what Dr. Tembekwaya said with regards to medicines availability. And it's a huge problem. I mean, we've got into clinics recently that don't have antibiotics, no BCGs, not one but a myriad of shortages that really, really pose problems. But in terms of what she was saying with regards to Cuban vaccines, having just returned from Cuba, we were actually quite amazed by the developments they've made in diabetic treatments and cancer treatments. Really quite staggering, and we saw clinical outcomes to substantiate their claims. Are we assessing those medicines, particularly the diabetic and the cancer ones particularly? I mean, when you go to a country where they're basically saying to us, and they didn't use this term, but that was the indication that we've got, is that cancer some of the cancers in Cuba have now basically become chronic diseases and not killers. I want to know where we stand with doing the research on their products, because I think we could score tremendously in South Africa, where those are two very large killers. And the other two are with regards to the task teams. You discussed within the report the establishment of NHI implementation teams under various categories. Are they established, and who sits on them? And the national task team, ministerial task team, is that established, and where are they? When are we going to start seeing results? And just finally, Chair, not a question. Malnutrition did come up in your presentation, and it is something we're going to see substantially grow in South Africa, and I think we really need to put more plans in place to deal with malnutrition. Joblessness is growing. The social grants are not growing at the same level. In actual fact, current social childcare grants particularly cannot feed the families, because at the moment childcare grants feed families, not children. And we're seeing growing instances of malnutrition, stunted child development, and all of that kind of thing. And I really think that it is something that does fall under us, that those children are going to be stunted from day one, which is in the future going to seriously affect us as a country. And I really believe that more emphasis needs to be at the primary health care dealing with malnutrition as well. I thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Chair. Just a clarity, Chair, on the... You have got 1,502 IDEL candidates that are set by IDEL state, region IDEL status. I just want to understand the IDEL requirements vis-a-vis the core standard. I'm raising this in the context that we've got these 1,502 that have written IDEL. Then the Office of the Health Standard Compliance come up with a report that says most of our primary health care are below 60. That's the report they presented in July to us, that almost all our primary health office facilities are not performing very well. But in terms of the IDEL status, it's a different picture altogether. So which standard can we rely on? The IDEL one, the one from the Office of the Health Standard is using in terms of based on the core standards? And how do you then correlate the two so that they're able to talk to each other? Because if you come up with a report that says these are silver, gold, then the Office of the Health Complex says, no, this is below the standard performance. Because if I recall that report, there were about 2-3 clinics that were at 80. The rest were below 60 in terms of the report that they gave. But on the IDEL, it's a different picture altogether. So it confuses me, how the two relate to each other. That's one area that I just want to get a clarity on. And then the second issue is around the issue of the EMS. Does that mean that the monitoring system that has been developed is going to monitor the performance at the national level of EMS? I'm raising this because what I have observed is that the EMS in some parts of the country is not there. In some of the facilities that one visited in June and July and August, nurses, DG, are transporting patients out of their own cars to the hospital because there is no response from EMS. There's no single clinic that I went to and said, no, we were getting joy from EMS. All of them said, no, we transport patients when they're in critical. We've got no option because there's no response from EMS at all when we call them. Some, they're not even very far. I remember, for example, Savi, and the clinic is about 2 kilometers. But they can't respond. So the nurse has to take her own car, take this patient to the clinic. And that's what is happening generally in most of the clinics. Nurse operation managers have got to do that work on behalf of EMS. So it's a serious matter. Otherwise, people, if they don't do that, people are going to die. They have to take their own cars to do this work. And then the third issue goes to the issue of the finances. I observe that where there is there is underperformance on the grants, where there's all the grants is where there's underperformance. There is a common denominator called Mpumalanga in all of them. What have you identified as a problem? Because the denominator everywhere where there is a underperformance, the health professional grant, they are there. The national tertiary service grant, they are there. It's only the HIV where everybody has performed very well, they also performed very well. Health infrastructure facility, they are there. While others, they are interchangeable. In others they perform well, in others they didn't. But they're a common denominator. What could have been the problem for them to remain that common denominator? And what interventions are you making? Though you have put general attributing factors to all of them as one, which I don't think is practical, that all the 9 provinces where there are challenges, the attributing factor becomes one or common, as if they talk to each other, now let's do this, let's not do this. I just want to understand in particular why Mpumalanga is a common denominator in the whole system. And then lastly, Chair, the Auditor General has raised the issue as the root causes for some of the poor responses. I mean, report on the audit outcome. And I'll just list them and hear why is it like that and what is it that we're putting in place to deal with them. One of them they are saying it's inadequate consequences for poor performance and transgression, which means there's no consequences. Why is it like that when people are doing wrong things? For example, there's wasteful and fruitless expenditure. I didn't hear what the DG said about it. And the PSMA is very clear about that matter. When there is fruitless and wasteful expenditure, what must happen? There must be consequences. But I didn't hear what you're saying about it. And then the other thing is low response by management, including the DG herself. That's what the report says. That is a slow response from the DG and the senior management as a whole on issues that are raised by the Auditor General on the audit process. And then the third one is key officials lacking appropriate competencies. Have you identified those key officials that are lacking key competencies, and what plan are you putting in place to build that capacity for those officials so that they have the necessary competence to be able to deliver the service? So these are the things that the AG has raised as a root cause for the performance of audit outcome in the manner that they've come up with. But the last worrying factor that the AG has raised is the whole issue of IT. It's a big, big problem. I'm not sure whether it's related to what the delay was raising. Because they raised it as a big problem, as a huge problem in the department, the IT system, as one of the biggest weaknesses that needs special attention by the department. What exactly are the challenges, and what plans are you putting in place to address those challenges around the IT? Thanks.
Honorable Cooper. Thank you, Chair. This morning we were briefed by the Compensation Commissioner for Occupational Disease in terms of their progress. And unfortunately, even today, no annual report was received from the entity. But we were made to understand that there was a recent meeting with the minister. If maybe the department can update us, what are the developments? But listening to them again this morning, the most challenging thing, it is about shortage of staff. And what is worrying me, I think it's a conflict of interest, because now the company, the mining companies, they've also seconded their staff to assist them. So they're supposed to be overseeing, their oversight body to oversee the mines are doing their job. But at the same time, now the very same mining people, they've co-opted some staff to help them. So for me, for now, it's still worrying, but it clearly shows that if you don't have money, you can sleep with your enemy. That's what I pick it up. And the problem of staff within the entity is so huge. But I like, since 2010, as compared to now, there is a progress. I like their passion, they are committed, they want to do something. But what is worrying me is in terms of staff, I just want to find out from the department, are you going to review their organizational structure? Because for me, the structure is supposed to talk with the challenges that they are facing. When will that happen? My other question, Chair, with many departments, they use consultants, and it costs many departments a lot of money. But at the end of the day, the consultants, they leave the department, there's no skills transfer. And many times we never understand what was exactly the role of those consultants in each and every department. If maybe we can be told about the role of the consultant, if they were ever being used, and is there any skills transfer, was there any value for money, those are the things that we can understand. My last question, Chair, you know, you go everywhere in government departments, there are condoms everywhere, males and females, they are distributed everywhere, in many colors. But I also want to find out, how do we measure the impact in terms of what we want to achieve to give such the condoms to people and the money that we... It's not a waste. The intention is good, but can we measure the impact of that? Thank you, Chair. Honorable Ngonzo.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted clarity about the Cuban doctors that have finished training in Cuba, because a mention was made that when they arrive to actually put in practice what they have learned or studied. They are made to not to actually practice what they were trained for, particularly the primary health care. And my question is who is responsible for that? If that is not happening, who can we get to account in that respect? Number two, Chair, there is existence of clinic committees in the country, like the SGB, like the Community Police Forum. We get those at the provincial and national level. I just wanted to check if that is the case with the clinic committees in terms of structures. And the last one, Chair, is actually wanting to know who in the province one can actually deal with, because I know I can't go to the minister to talk about clinic committees in the province. I can't go to the HOD, but I know that the national department is communicating with the provinces in respect of the clinic committees and things like that. If I could just get clarity on those. Thank you very much.
Two questions from myself. Chuba, when we visited the Center of Molecular and Immunology, an issue was raised when we were asking if they do have partnership with other countries, and they then said South Africa is a bit dragging its feet. What could be the problem? I'm raising this because we can't be dragging feet. Even the other one, the last center that we visited, which was also dealing with diabetic ulcers and diabetic and the whole issue, that they said they it's not that they are not coming forth. I think they said they have with Stellenbosch, if I'm not mistaken. But with the national department, with the country as a whole, why is it that as government we are dragging our feet when we are sending students for medicine, and there are then other components of medicine that we are seen not to be, I don't want to say cooperating, when we are seen that our working relations are not fine. This issue of I may be lost, and you have to maybe make me to understand. At the beginning of the administration, 2014, there was a hype on WISEN by the department, and that hype on WISEN was to then deal with the mismatch of staff in the department. We are still seated with that problem now. And there is no mention, only that I thought about that when the minister was gone. There's no mention that as we then were, it was at the time, it was a project that we thought that is going to relatively deal with the issues of the shortage of staff. What is it that you picked up there that couldn't? Do you have a report on the issue of the fake food? I understand that it was to be done by health inspectors at the state. Do you have a report, and how then are you if there is a report? If you don't, we'll appreciate if you. Is there any chance that before we rise, maybe as this committee, the bill on national health insurance will come to Parliament? Or I don't want to assume, in listening to you, I don't want to assume that it's going to be a responsibility of the next committee in the next administration, because you spoke about the, some of the issues have been raised by members, which I do think that they are, I don't want to repeat, safe to just to make an emphasis. It is really quite disturbing, this issue, where the minister has put the view that we have to assist you, but I'm not quite sure. System of provinces, it can't be. I think it just can't be that we still have provinces that, oh, yeah, I was trying to think, which are these two provinces that said, Bonabazuians are not going to do that? Can we be told? What is the thing that you raised about refusing in the negotiations? You said there are areas where you negotiate with provinces on issues, and there are two provinces that said, no, we're not going to do that. Would like to know. Our public representatives, our constituency offices as in provinces, we have got that responsibility of speaking with them. I do speak with them. If I'm called by a person that I've never seen from a bar of soap, for instance, Honorable Thembe Kwayo sent me that thing, and I forwarded that to the MEC of Gauteng. So if I'm called or sent an SMS by a picture by any person whom I've never seen from a bar of soap, and Western Cape is one of the Western Cape, Northern Cape, and my province, I do communicate with MECs. I send them back, and I would want to be. But even up to district managers, maybe by up they will complain to you. I do. So I'm saying, who would like to know who are those provinces? Who are those two provinces that are in? Because at the end, people don't know about. They know that national is here, and the responsibility of national is to deal with provinces, and that's what people outside say. So that's why we are given this. So for me, that is the question. So why I'm asking that question? So otherwise, some of the issues have been raised by honourable members. I forgot, honourable members, to tell you that honourable Ndaba had a crisis at home. That's why she had to leave immediately. So when you see, don't see him here, her here, don't think that he has. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with the Honourable Thembe Kwayo regarding the Tobacco Amendment Bill. Yes, we did take into account e-cigarettes. Vaping, I think we're looking at that, but there's also something called hookah. Is it hookah? Yeah, we're looking at all these innovative ways that are being used to attract particularly the young people. And I know, honourable members, that I don't want to divert. It's late. That it is in this meeting that we are discussing the Medicine Innovation Bill, and that we've got the Constitutional Court judgment. And when we have time, we'll come and present what is it that we're doing. Not today, but at some other time. The China and other countries, now, globally, the countries, because, you know, the APIs that are used for most of the pharmaceuticals, I think China and India are lead countries. But for vaccines, Cuba is the country. In fact, the meningitis vaccine that is used globally was developed by Cubans, and the rights were given to a GSK GlaxoSmithKline for the meningitis vaccine. So Cuba actually is very good in biotechnology. And the some of the API produced are actually chemically produced, which are not necessarily biotechnologically derived. Now, because of volumes, China and India are the two key countries that are leading globally. But I think the intention was to see South Africa, because we're the major consumer of antiretrovirals, whether we could be also producing APIs as the largest consumer of ARVs. And this is the Gidlapila project, which has not taken off, unfortunately. But I think we can explore that and find out and understand why there's been delays. Honorable Wilson, the student program and it being part of higher education, I think that has been sort of a welcome initiative, and we've started a process of engaging between the two departments to share how best we can be of assistance. On accommodation and nursing colleges, I fully agree. Actually, in some of the colleges in Northwest, the lecturers did not even have a proper offices, and they were it was an inappropriate environment for teaching. So Ms. Hunter actually is following up on the two colleges, the only two colleges, to make sure that at least there's proper accommodation. I went to inspect some of the accommodation, not just for students, but even for lecturers. So it's a problem for both, and it's a key concern. Medicine availability shortages, I think Anban Pile will respond to that. The Kimberley vaccine capacity, like I said, but biotechnology, they've actually invested a lot as a country to sort of up their skills in the areas of engineering as well. If you recall, we had the Cuban clinical engineers that came a couple of years ago, and the idea was for them to help us to train South Africans to fix when equipment is broken, they should fix it. Now, given the South African way of registration of professionals, unfortunately they didn't agree to them assisting, which I thought was just being a little bit obstructive, because we could still have used them, you know, to fix our equipment in our facilities. Regarding the task teams, Dr. Pile, who's leading the NHI, will respond. Both the implementation teams and the ministerial task team, including the ones that are working on the health summit. Malnutrition, yes, we agree. Dr. Pile will also respond. Because we really have to deal with this. Stunting is a big problem. In fact, in our demographic health survey, it stood out. I think it's what's the percent? 27%? That's fairly high. And it's a big, big problem. Honorable Mashalela, the alignment between ideal clinic requirements and the cost standards, Dr. Andrews will respond, and some of the engagement, because it actually took a lot of engagement between the Office of Health Standard Compliance and the official of the Department of Health that are doing ideal clinic work to match and ensure there's alignment, in terms that they are not measuring the same thing. So that's the first problem. And I think it's been a very intensive kind of engagement, very, very intense. But I think we've found a agreement, and the two teams are working together, including the finalization of the regulations. On EMS, I think the idea here is to have a national system where we can monitor the performance of the province's EMS systems. I actually agree. When we went to Free State, in one of the clinics, the EMS agreement that they have in the province, we're actually shocked. They say it only collects patients from one hospital to the other. So if they call the ambulance from a clinic to take patients to hospital, the service is not covered by that. So in those instances, we have evidence that nurses use their own facilities and their cars, which is unfortunate. So we've raised this with the province during our provincial visit. Now, under performance on the grant, the common denominator, Mpumalanga, one of the things, when we gave you the report about the 50 hospitals, we actually assigned each DDG a province. And the approach here was also to look at the grants, the performance of the grants in relation to also just general performance. And I'll ask Dr. Andrews also to respond about Mpumalanga in particular, about I know that we focus on NTSG when we looked at Mpumalanga, but the others we didn't particularly zoom in on, but NTSG was of particular concern. The root causes that the AG raised and inadequate intervention. Actually, we do have a very basic system. If the audit findings are about what is it? No show. Very simple system. I take the money. I write. I tell people on this day, we'll take the money. You have to pay. If it's gross, then we start the disciplinary process. In fact, we had one official who was supposed to refund us 2 million, and he subsequently died. We have actually very specific processes, but we do it also in a measured way, because we don't want to drive people to extreme kind of a psychological state. But we do act chair. The issue about low response by management, I think AG has raised very specific issue about irregular expenditure. One relates to the HPV, and the second one is about HIST and HST. Now, I don't think it's lack of response. You'll see in my letters, I'm responding because I'm asking AG specific technical issues. Now, if there's a principal issue that must be addressed, I don't think AG must respond by saying with its lack of response. These letters that I've written to the Accountant General, I've also mentioned to the AG that I would like them to deal with them, because it's a balance between compliance and the cost of compliance. We can sit and want to comply and not deliver. And I think it's a question of balance. And we are saying here, if AG says we must sit and just write this example I used, issue certificate of compliance for every single thing, we can do that, we'll comply. But it is not practical. That's all what we're saying. Now, if it's a finding for me as an accounting officer, I think it's unfortunate. But I've written, you'll read for yourself the issues that I'm raising. For the other two issues, I'm going to ask Dr. Pile to respond specifically, and Dr. Andrews, because this irregular expenditure relates to the work in their area, but there's also a letter in relation to that I raised to the Accountant General. Do you want to respond to both of them?
Thanks, DG, and Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. There's two things I need to respond to. One is malnutrition and stunting, then there's his irregular expenditure. I'll start with the malnutrition and stunting. Clearly, all the indications we have is that the levels of malnutrition are going up and levels of stunting are not going down. So we've been working with the Presidency. The Presidency called a meeting last year to look at food security. All government departments are supposed to be working together to ensure food security for families and for children. With respect to children in particular, we've been working with the DG Murray Trust, which is a trust based in Cape Town, to to look at innovative ways of getting nutritious food to children. So one of the things they've been finding is that eggs are a very good source of protein and can be locally produced, because you can have chickens running around in many places, not everywhere, not in an apartment, not in flats and things. So we're looking at how we can use those kinds of innovations to improve the nutrition of children. But one of the key things about malnutrition and stunting is that it doesn't start after the child is born. It starts during pregnancy, which means that we have to ensure that women who are in the reproductive age are well nourished as well. Otherwise, you're going to get a lot of consequences post-delivery. So it's a big problem, and it's not just a Department of Health problem. It's a problem for the whole country, really. On the issue of HISP, I think the CFO fairly clearly outlined how we found ourselves in this problem. We've been using HISP to develop the information system to help us record every child that had the first and then the second dose. And if we don't do that, then we don't know which child has received the first dose and therefore should receive the second dose, which child has been completely vaccinated with two doses, etc. And we had that together with an SLA, leveraging off the HST SLA, as I think both the DG and the CFO have explained, up to 2017-18. We, of course, didn't know that in 2017-18 we should have gone out on tender for it. If we didn't use them, we would not have had the technical backup to collect the data, because the data is collected on tablets, and the tablets, as you know, need to be refreshed, the data has to be uploaded into a cloud, need to collate the data, etc. So HISP has been helping with collation of data using tablets to make it easier for the nurses rather than them writing on pieces of paper. So it's, you know, the use of the technology increased our efficiency, was able to, helped us to report against the conditional grant, but clearly the procurement issue became the irregular expenditure. But as the DG explained, I think, you know, in retrospect, it's a good investment to have made. It wasn't fruitless expenditure, but it was irregular. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, DG. Chair and honourable members, I don't know if I should add much more than what DG and Dr. Pillay has already explained, except to say that we have historically been having a relationship with HISP, because initially it was an investment from the Danish government. They made a donation, they funded the system, and HISP was contracted at the time to develop our district health information system. And since then, we've been using HISP. We have a service level agreement with them wherein the deliverables are spelled out and the nature of the relationship, and that's what we make the transfers for. And we monitor that tightly and closely. It's very difficult to develop because they assist us to implement our health systems information policy. And they've developed most of the software, and they provide technical expertise in terms of programming. It's not always easy to go out on a tender to do this work, because over the years we've worked with them, and provinces themselves have struggled to get on board to develop the system, because as our needs for data became more complex and we demanded more and more in terms of reporting, we built the system. So that's how come we've been doing it this way.
Honourable members, these letters that I'm sharing with you, I've also shared with the Auditor General. They've actually asked for a meeting for us to discuss these in sufficient detail. So I'm just saying that they've raised this, and we've also told them that it's got fundamental problems with this, because it will undermine service delivery. So in their audit way, if for them it's a finding, but we want to stand our ground on this, because we can't undermine service delivery in this, because we'll never know whether young girls are immunized or not, and so on. And we've always understood that they're supposed to look at the accuracy of the data. But if we don't do it and we do it manually, it's not going to happen. I can say it up front. It's not possible. With regard to the key officials who lack competence, I think the CFO must respond, because they raised the supply chain areas. CFO.
So just looking at what the IG found,
the recourses was for the entire sector, for the entire portfolio. So, in the, you know, National wasn't particularly flagged for this one in terms of lack of competencies. But definitely when it comes to the inadequate of and consequence management, of which Adija, I think, has referred to. The other one was a slow response by management. Just to say, Chair, that we do have a protocol with the AG. We do have weekly sessions with him. So I'm not exactly sure why we're flagged in terms of slow responses. We track our requests for information on a weekly basis, our communications on a weekly basis, and nothing was outstanding at the time of the audit. But we will kind of agree with them is just the issue of the consequence management. I suppose when it comes to supply chain, then there needs to be better monitoring of that. Thanks.
IT, Ms. Remy.
Thank you, Gigi. Honourable members and chair, there are in the AG findings. There were numerous repeat findings from IT, and that is why in their dashboard IT reflects as red, which means it needs urgent attention. Largely, the root causes of those findings are capacity, as in the warm bodies that are in the IT unit at National. I'm not talking about the sector. Dr. Andrews can talk to the sector issues. So I'm talking about for National Health. There are capacity issues. We have a staff complement that has been there for many years. And honorable members will probably know that IT environment evolves. So some of them do not want to go for training for new developments. So it's a labor issue management that we discussed with the audit committee chair, who advised on the route to follow, and we actually applied the advice she gave us, and the situation has improved because they did not want to be reassigned new duties based on new technology, new developments, and all that. But we had meetings with them, and the situation has improved for the current year. But the repeat finding from previous years was about that. With the attitude that I've been here long enough, I know we've been doing it like this, and they don't want to change, and they don't want to be trained. So we have improved, as the audit report has reflected now, that all those repeat findings have been dealt with. The findings that we have as an IT for National are new, and we are addressing them. And most of them are about old infrastructure of IT. So it needs funding, which we are now addressing. The DG and the CFO has assisted quite a lot in that. And other programs, we have identified funding that can be shifted to be redirected to IT so that we can address the issue of old infrastructure for IT, for national, at national level. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Kopane raised the issue of CCOD regarding shortage of staffing and their options. In fact, this proposal to have the mining companies upon staff labour has raised objections to it. We have letters to that effect. And the team has actually presented a new structure. Ms. Reni, want to talk to that?
Thank you, Tiji. Honourable members. Yes, 2 years ago, the commissioner presented a new proposed organogram. It was highly bloated, unfortunately, and unaffordable. It was like creating a new department. So it was sent back to the commissioner and the team to re-look at it, review it, look at the affordability, because it needed the unit of the organizational development to go through it for the purposes of investigating and doing job evaluations and all that, so that we can recommend to the DG for approval. But from the onset, it was an unaffordable structure. So we sent it back to them and identified critical posts for them to focus on for their functionality.
So that's where we are. At the moment, we don't have a revised approved structure. We have an old structure with new posts, critical posts that were identified and we are implementing. We are not yet at the stage where we have a comprehensively new revised structure for CCOD because they need to review it. It was just too expensive. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, Dr. Pile will end with the condo. I just wanted to deal with the Cuban program. I think the minister tried to answer this question by saying when the Cuban students come back, I think the manner in which they are allocated in the provinces, the province just appoint people based on availability of posts. And unfortunately, they allocate them to hospitals instead of to facilities. But we wanted to use this cohort that has just come back to change that so that they don't allocate them to hospitals. I don't know whether it has to do with the fact that when they come back, they still do the last leg of training. And that last leg is done in a hospice-centric sense, following the South African model. It might be the contributory factor, but I don't want to make those assumptions. But it is a problem. You find them in hospital, and they shouldn't be. So what we probably are going to do is to write the with this group, this cohort of 720 that arrived, that as they finish their program, there must be already a plan of where they are allocated. Otherwise, it's a loss in terms of investment. We'd have done very well with our primary healthcare program if we just allocated them to where they should be. The next one about clinic committees and who to contact will make Mr. Morewane available to you, and he will tell you the focal points and provinces that he's working with, even as they do assessment. And maybe as they do some of the assessment, you might want to witness that so that you get a feel of how they conduct the assessment, particularly with regard to the functionalities, meaning both at national and at a provincial level, so we can share those details with per province and also at a national level. Chair, with regard to the molecular immunology, and yes, the agreement that we have with the Cubans, initially with the ambassador who has been replaced, we had an agreement to bring Cuban doctors to South Africa, meaning doctors of Cuban origin to come and fill vacant posts. And the majority of them were actually family physicians. There were very few in other specialties. Maybe often gynae, but majority were family physicians. And it makes sense because of the primary health care program. And the second agreement is about sending students to Cuba for their training. The third was supposed to be for clinical engineers to repair broken equipment. But that one, like I said, there were difficulties with the first group in a sense that we're told that the professional body of engineers, they won't meet the standards. You know, it was a complex issue that we couldn't resolve. So we didn't pursue it further. The one on R&D, unfortunately, the department that runs the R&D agenda is the Department of Science and Technology. And it would be good if it's a sort of partnership between the two science and technology departments. Because MRC, unfortunately, has not come to the level at which Cuba is performing. No, they haven't. I think it would be good for them to up their ante a bit to reach that level. With regard to maybe if they visit Cuba, that might help for them to understand the research and development capacity of Cuba, particularly with regard to biotechnology, because they've done very well. The WISEN
Chair, we have finished the primary health care wise, and we can show you implementation, and we can even show you where they've been left. In fact, the province that was behind is Northwest, and they had caught up. It's only at primary care level. At hospital, we're supposed to have started with districts, like you'll see performance. It says 30. We're supposed to just start with 30 facilities. We haven't. I'm very optimistic about Wisen at primary care level, but at hospital level, we haven't as yet started. Miss Skyler can talk about fake food.
Thanks, DJ. Honorable members, in terms of fake food, we've got a system in place because what happened in August, there was a communique after the social media videos that were circulating throughout the country. There was a communique to municipalities for environmental health practitioners to go out and do the investigation. To date, I can report that we've not been able to find any fake food. However, in Northern Cape, there was a factory found to be making counterfeit goods. Mainly, they were processing Robertson's products and also spices, the yeast, and all of that to the value of about $77 million. However, in terms of the inspection blitz that we have done, we are working together with the police, which are actually assisting us as we go out and inspect all these shops. To date, or as of the end of September, maybe the information that I can share with the committee, we've been able to do 281 joint operations together with the South African Police Services. In terms of the premises that have been reached by environmental health practitioner, 2,212. And then the biggest problem that we are finding as we go and do these operational blitz, most of these food shops, about 1,465 premises, are operating without the health certificates. And then out of these also premises, we have issued 457 and notices in terms of these facilities to close down. And also out of those that have got certificate of acceptability, some of them were found not to be compliant with our health requirements. So it's still an ongoing process, but we have actually also meant, or we've gotten a hotline that we have been that we've established together with NICD, and it's meant by community environmental health practitioners, and they are able to receive these complaints as they come through. But as we are sitting here, we have not received any information about the fake food. But the problem that we're facing as a country is the fact that we've got all these facilities that or food shops that are operating without health certificates, and some of them are not even licensed. Thank you.
On the medicine stock up.
In terms of the medicine stockers, I spoke about the two ARVs that are a problem. We have had a problem with BCG. There's actually a global problem with BCG. In fact, in the US and in most of Europe, they have a huge problem with BCG as well. We've been getting supplies, erratic supplies, so not in line with what we need. However, I think by the beginning of November, we will start getting stocks from a Danish company that had historically been supplying us, but that company had huge production problems and then they stopped, and many countries had relied on them. So we were promised that by November we would be getting supplies of BCG, but it's a massive global problem. Even the Global Fund and UNICEF, which purchases as well, don't have stock. And so if you go on the website now of the US or Europe, you'll find that they have a problem as well.
NHI committees.
On the NHI committees, given that the bill is now out, we had thought it would be appropriate to first finalize the bill before the committees can then be established, because the committees will then have some clear sense about what would be in the legislative environment, so they would be able to work to something which is much clearer. In terms of the bill, I'm not sure. It depends on cabinet, I guess, as to when they process the bill and when it's sent to you. The traditional leaders used to tell me that if I spent enough time with them, they would help me predict these things, but I didn't, so I'm not able to.
Is the Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, on the issue of how, Honourable Kupana, how do we measure condom use? So there are really three things. One is reported condom use, and the latest data we have for that is from 2017, the HSRC survey. And what that shows is that condom use amongst 15 to 24-year-olds are relatively high. This is now reported use. It's about 67%. Where it comes down to about 40%, it's between 25 and 49-year-olds. That's where the big challenge is. So the younger folk seem to be using condoms more frequently. And this is, the question is, do you use condoms at every sexual intercourse that you engage in? The second is, of course, in terms of looking at STI rates, the rates of sexually transmitted infections. Unfortunately, in some provinces, the rates are going up, including this province and the Northern Cape. So we are trying to investigate what's going on with STIs and why the rates are going up. It might well be that we're finding more of it because people are presenting more often. Might be a consequence of that. And then the third is, which is probably a good predictor, is HIV incidence. Now, on that note, again from the HSRC survey, we find that the overall incidence of HIV has come down significantly between 2012 and 2017. And it's come down in all age groups, including men and women. So there's some good news on the HIV incidence rate, and it's not like people are not having sex. So people are still having sex, but clearly they are having more protected sex by 2017 than 2012. So those are the three measures. One is a bit softer than the other two. That we use.
The last one about the two provinces. These, with regard to the indicators, when we engage and we negotiate, it's mainly KZN and Western Cape. I think those are the two. But generally, others, there are some who don't respond at all, meaning they accept whatever, but these two do respond, and they want fewer indicators. And sometimes when we come to the portfolio committee, say, but we've got fewer indicators. But it's a negotiation process between ourselves and provinces. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think we have we've asked a number of questions, and hoping that we know that the sector is quite a challenging sector, and it's emotive by its nature. I'm not quite sure. I'm sure members would correct me. I don't know whether it's NHLS or MRC which was disputing what FFC was saying, and I think it was NHLS, and we proposed to them that as much as FFC is an independent body, but they must try and have some a one-to-one, because they were completely saying the information that we were given is not a true reflection. So I do think that we then have to. The second area that I do think that is very important around malnutrition, which we'll have to deal with it vigorously as the department within the context of the non-communicable disease, the obesity among young people. Among children and youth, that has been said that it's becoming high in South Africa, and therefore maybe it's going to necessitate that as we move on, as we'll be have a report to the next committee, really what is being fed in the tuck shops, in our schools, whether public or private, but how then do we as public representatives, as National Department of Health, we go out and talk to our people. I always fight with my daughter on what she is feeding her children. And she will tell me that it's the 21st century. But I said by the time they are 30, when they have high blood pressure and diabetes, you wouldn't say they will be your baby. because who will have to look after them? So I'm saying they are those there. The last one maybe, which is for the, I was just asking, I will talk with you, which department does the mortuaries, state mortuaries, falls under which department? Is it you or police?
It's
both.
Okay.
No, it's because I had somebody send me an SMS. I think they have got close to 1,000 plus bodies that are not accounted for. I think that is the area of Sarah Batman, which is so she just wanted to know what is it that they must do.
Send the Bagisa.
Oh, okay.
This is Zani.
Yes.
You send it.
Well,
investigate.
Yeah. No, thank you very much. It's quite a, there are a number of issues. Some of them will write to you about them, about the exam board, NHLS, and whatever, students that are failing after they have passed. So it's quite a... I have forwarded you some tool documents. Please look into them, respond, because at some of those areas are areas that we are not able to respond to. I would appreciate if you follow up on what Honorable Mapanga and Honorable Tembekwayo have raised. It's serious. It's a serious matter, which I think we'll then have to look on it. We have then come to the end of our meeting. We will meet. I think honourable members will be updated about the how are we going to attend the presidential health summit. The secretariat is still awaiting a response from powers to be. Please check your SMSs until we meet again, which I think that will be on Friday. Thank you very much. Transport is arranged.